Okay. So today we talk about pets. Where's Tyler? No. Today we talk about pets. So today we're going to talk about dogs on Shabbos. Not just dogs, any pets on Shabbos. Some people may have birds. Some people may have chilazos. You know, everyone has their own pets. So are you allowed to touch pets, move pets, pet pets? Right. On Shabbos. So let's talk about this a little bit. So we're going to skip straight to Sif Lama Tess, where this comes up. It's based on Gemara and Shabbos, Tav Kuf Chav Ches. Gemara and Shabbos basically says animals are moksa. You're not allowed to carry them in Shabbos. And Mishabura over here in Kuf Mem Vav writes, why? Dehei Mechal Moksa Keitz Mavanim. Meaning there's Moksa Machlas Kufo. Dalo Chazu. There's nothing that they're ready for on Shabbos, and therefore it's like Eitz Mavanim. Vafilim Yachal Agil, I have said all the other men, even if you're going to lose a lot of money. Don't show up Parechal Gabi Akel Yachal Shabram. You have a bird that's prancing all over your very fragile kelim, and he's going to break all the kelim. Afilu achi asul tafsam biyadayim. You're still not allowed to grab the bird. Vafilu mum morgul bebayis mikvar. Desu ein bo mishum chashash tzeda. And even if you could avoid somehow the issues of tzeda, which are a separate issue that's in simshin tazayin, afilu achi litlam biyadayim asul mishum muktza. Even if it's not a violation of tzeda to grab the bird, it's a violation of muktza to grab the bird. Ela yafri chenam eleim. You got to like frighten them or something to make them fly away. Kavur b'sim shalom dal magen ram simkan gimel dal isra tilta muktza who afilu makom hefsit. Right, this isra tilta muktza applies even makom hefsit. Says in Mishabura pasuk pshat the halacha is what the Shulchan Aruch paskins here in Sif Lamed Tes, that also the talto behem machayev va'of, that there is a din of muksa on behem machayev va'of on Shabbos. So now even though there is a din of muksa by behem machayev va'of, the Gemara, the sugya, or the Mishnah rather, in Shabbos of Dafkuf Chazan Beis is beferish that there are some ways that you are allowed to move a bird on Shabbos or an animal on Shabbos. Tarnagola shabarcha dochenosa chitikanes. Or medadina galinus yachin. You could be medada. That those are two ways to move. Says Rashi, dochin biyadayim, to shove it along with your hand as opposed to picking the animal up, just to push it along. And medadina galim, oches bitzavaro, grab it by the neck, ubitzdadin, or by the sides, vigororo, and you sort of drag it, msayeo, and you suggest it in a certain direction. Where you shake its feet, but to pick up an animal, that's going to be usher. So the Gemara is pretty clear that you could grab an animal, or the way Rashi understands, at least you grab an animal's neck or body and even its legs to help it walk. However, the Ran is quoted by the Beis Yosef over here in Siman Shin Ches, where the Beis Yosef writes, the Kasva Ran, Umiyu Kashali. Wait a second. We discussed tiltul mutzah about opening a car door. We discussed tiltul mutzah about opening the door to your dryer and to your dishwasher and to your oven and all those things. Why was that even a discussion of mutzah? You're not moving the whole thing. You're not picking up your car and moving it from one place to the other. Why is that a discussion of mutzah? Because when there's an issue of mutzah, you're not even allowed to move part of the thing that is muktzah. It's not just an iser to move the entirety of the thing that is muktzah. So frek the Ran, I don't understand. Why would the Gemara say, oh, animals are muktzah, they're like eitzim vavanim, but, you know, you could pick up its leg to help it move, or you can push it by its neck or by its sides a little bit. Isn't that partial tiltul muktzah? So says the Ran, lefichach nir li, da'ach mishum tsar balei chayim nagu, v'davka kishat shrichel nakach. That is a special hetter. When the Gemara gives suggestions about how to make it move and says you're still allowed to pick it up, but you are allowed to move it slightly, that's only b'makom tsar bali chayim. It's only if the animal is going to suffer otherwise. But if you stop, you love your little puppy, so you want to pick up your puppy or walk it or move it in some way or another, but it's not, the animal's not suffering in any way, then there is no hetter, says the Ran. So that's the Ran, that it's all because of tsar bali chayim. So if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, in Sif Mem, kol behem chayvav medagnos amechater dahainu shochis betzavaram ubetzadim umalichan. Like Rashi says, im tzrichin habalei chayim lekach. You're allowed to do this if the balei chayim require this. Ubavachli agviyim bidin shakurak leim anaritz. But even then, you're not allowed to lift them to muktzin heim ba'asul etaltalan, because they are muktzah, and you're not allowed to be metaltal that which is muktzah. So the Shulchan Aruch paskins very, very clearly, like the Ran, that if it's for the sake of the animal, and you make sure that you don't lift it completely off the ground, Then you have the heter of tzar b'lichayim, and that's going to be okay. So it comes along the mishabur sifkatan kuf nun aleph im tzrichin umishum tzar b'lichayim. He says exactly what you'd expect him to say, because that's what the rabbi said. It's because of tzar b'lichayim. To milkein aslasis came to kol nidi the chazin the tiltuk shem shem metalton kulo. Exactly what the Ran said, that whenever you have an Isra Muksa, not only you're not allowed to move the entirety of the Muksa, you're not even allowed to move part of the Muksa, and therefore the whole thing is going to be is only going to be mutter in the case of Tzar Balichayim. Now in the Dirshu he points you back to Shin Hei Sivkatan Ayin. What's he pointing to in Shin Hei Sivkatan Ayin? So if you take a look back, if you backtrack in the Mishavur, the Sim Shin Hei Sivkat Nayim, the Shulchan Aruch over there says, talks about a behema shenafla la amas hamayim. You have an animal that fell into a well. So it's very, it's suffocating in the well, right? It's very painful for the animal to be in the well. So what would you say? So for following what we say over here, so if the animal is bitzar, so what are you allowed to do? You're allowed to be metade. You could somehow put a ladder maybe there. You could suggest that the animal move up. You could pick up its leg. But b'chora, even b'makom tzar b'lechayim, you're not allowed to lift the animal. Says the Shulchan Aruch, b'mishnaf l'am samayim, b'mayim mugr, ne'kach in yochal l'farnas b'mkoma. If you can't just throw food down there and keep the animal alive, maybe karm k'sasos, v'nosin tachta, mishum tzar b'lechayim, you could put cushions underneath the animal so that, and that's mutter because it's tzar b'lechayim, even though that's mevatel kli me'echano. Even though by putting cushions under, on the bottom of the well, when the animals are going to go up on the cushions, so it's mevatel kli me'echano, you don't have to worry about it. So says the Mishabura over there, avol asul alos b'yadayim. But what you can't do is to take the animal out. To call b'lechayim e'muktzim. Because all b'lechayim are muktza. Va'afal gav di'ika tzar b'lechayim asur. And even though there's tzar b'lechayim, it's still going to be asir. So that's why but one second he quotes the so in the then he continues va'ayin be'el yaraba shehevi diyesh poskim shemekilim afla alosa. Then the Mishabur Aflalosa Biyadayim, Imi Yafshali De Karmuk Sassos. Then he quotes an El Yerabba that says that now you can even pick it up. It's Tzar B'lechayim, so you've been allowed to pick the animal up. Ba'al Yedei, Eino Yehudi, Lukuli Alam Matalalosa B'zeot. If you also Minach Skarmuk Sassos, if you have a guy, it's even better. So there you see the El Yerabba clearly disagrees with what the Mishabur is saying over here. The El Yerabba says that B'makam Tzar B'lechayim, you're not only allowed to suggest the animal in a certain direction or to pick up part of the animal, but Makom Tzar B'lechayim, you're allowed to lift the entirety of the animal. Now, it's a pretty extreme case of Tzar B'lechayim, but the Eli Rabbah says, by the animal's in a pit, it's not just them, the animal looks like you could use some love and a little bit of a snuggle or whatever, a person assesses that his animal might need. Meaning it's a real tzar b'lechayim, it's a real situation of a tzar to the animal. So then, because of tzar b'lechayim, that's what the El Yerabba says. So if it falls in a pit, so then you're allowed to lift the animal according to the El Yerabba. In Shmir Shabbos, he quotes that Chaznish passes like the El Yerabba, that you can carry an animal b'makom tzar b'lechayim, and b'makom hefsid. The Makamah Hafsid of money. Shmir Shabbos writes, Gedolim is Mutsan of Chazanishim in the base of Kantazain, Sover Kel Yeraba, the Mutsal Tal to Mutsal Makam Shish Hafsid, Vitzar Belichayim. That the Chazanish says you need both. That it needs to be Tzar Belichayim and it's going to be a Hafsid. Either the animal is going to die or it's going to cause some damage where it is because it's going to be so uncomfortable that it's going to start going nuts and breaking things. So if it's a Makam Hafsid and a Makam Tzar B'lechayim, then you're allowed to lift the animal. So where we are right now is that it's very clear in the Mishnah Brura, based on the Gemara, based on the Ran, that to move parts of the animal, B'makam Tzar B'lechayim, is mutter. To lift the entirety of the animal, B'makam Tzar B'lechayim, Machlokas and Mishnah Brura and Sim Shin Hei, right? It sounds from here it's going to be Aser, Machlokas and Mishnah Brura and Sim Shin Hei between other posts of Magen Avraham versus the El Yerabba. And the Chaznish is willing to be make like the Eli Rabbi if it's not only Tzar B'lechayim, but it's also B'makom Hefzit. Yeah.
But the Chaznish shouldn't be able to be applied to an actual pet, because I assume there's not ever B'makom Hefzit by a pet, only by a
pet. First of all, it could die, so that's a loss of money. These things, the dogs are expensive, I discovered. I mentioned, Guy Meshul said to me, he's like, we bought a dog, we'll see if it works. If it works, comes to worst, it's $5,000, what's the big deal? I'm like, big deal.
In general, the issue of the exit is that you're gonna have to like buy it again.
More than half of a coal stipend.
by a normal behemoth like a cow, I assume that it's partially used for the guy's business or like it's his food. So if he would lose his cow, he'd have to buy another cow. If you lose your dog, then you just lost your dog.
Right. Okay. So you're saying that's not the kind of hefsid that we're talking about.
I know. I'm asking.
I thought that if something is valuable and you lose it, that's called a hefsid.
But it's because you have to replace it, or because you just lost its value in the first place.
I think the loss of value. Yeah. Whether you replace it or not, you don't have to replace it, obviously. Meaning you're saying if it's a cow, then you do have to replace it. Yeah, it's just a loss of value. Now, there is a machlok rishonim. What if the animal is not a cow that's on your farm? It's not a goat. It's not, you know, something that you use for farm work. It's not a chicken that you use to lay eggs. Meaning most of the time, everyone comes to my house and sees my chilazons. The big chilazon was out this morning. So everyone comes and sees my chilazons and says, oh, do you make tcheles with them? No, I don't make trailers with them. They're just in the tank. They just sit there. So what if you have an animal, not because it's working on your farm or because it's doing anything, but just because it entertains the children or it entertains, having a chilazon, it entertains the rabbi that lives in the house and thinks it's really cool, even though everyone else thinks it's crazy. So what about, so the Rishonim deal directly with this. That if you have an animal that's used to keep a kid happy, right, the child is crying, and you say, "Oh, look, look at the fishies, or to walk the dog, or whatever, play with the dog," and it keeps the child from crying. So Tosus and Shabbos and Daf Menhei Amid Beis, Divrei Maskil Hacha, and the Mordechai in the Shintes Zayin, and Agos Ashri on the side of the Rosh in the third paragraph in Simchat Aleph, they all quote Rishonim who say that such an animal is not going to be mukta, because it has utility on Shabbos. You can use it for something. You can use it to keep your kid happy. However, all of the aforementioned Rishonim, Tosos, and Mordechai, and Agos Ashri, and the Rush, quoted in Chuvas Marachar Zeruah and Pei Beis, all reject that sheet in Rishonim, and they reject that sheet in Rishonim for two different reasons. First of all, the fact that an animal can be used to quiet a child may not be enough utility to take something that is otherwise mutzah machlas gufo and say now it is no longer mutzah machlas gufo. Meaning, it could be that it needs to have much more direct and beneficial usage than to keep your kid from annoying you, right? Meaning that may not be enough utility to take away the status of mutzah machlas gufo. The other reason they reject this shita is that it's just a low plug, that the Chum said that animals are muksa. Animals are muksa, and it doesn't make a difference whether you find the utility for it, even if it's a great utility for it, even if you find something very beneficial to use for it, much more than just quieting down a kid. So in Shulchan Aruch, in Lamed Tes, Shulchan Aruch just says, Asul l'taltal behemachai va'of, right, just straight out. That it's also the taltal behem chayvo. Seems like the shita that is the more strict of the two opinions. And Shulchan Aruch Rav is also machmir on this issue that animals are muksa. However, in the Chuvas Halachos Ketanos, he's a little more makel. Rav Mordechai Eliyahu was makel because. He thought the whole thing is machlokes rishonim on a din rabbanan. That's a din rabbanan is muksa only din rabbanan anyway. Machlokes rishonim on din rabbanan, you could be mekel, which is a shvera way to approach this shayla. Meaning, Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, by the way, was not known to be a big mekel. He was not. I just learned from a chapter's book on Sephardi and Ashkenazi practice. You guys know about this book? It's fantastic. He wrote a book, because he's an Ashkenazi rabbi of a Sephardi shul, he wrote a book about divergences in practice between Sephardim and Ashkenazim. So he has a few pages, a few pages on each area of halacha, what the major issues of divergence are, and sometimes within the Sephardi world, people think all Sephardim hold the same thing, and they don't. So in the end, he has short essays about each of the major Sephardic poskim. From more recent Sephardic posts were about Yosef and Rav Mordechai Eliyahu and Ben Tzion Abba Shaul, a few pages on each of them and what made them unique. So in the back, what he discusses each of the poskim. So there are a number of differences between Rav Vadia and Rav Ben Tzion, and Rav Mordechai Eliyahu rather. Ben Sion was also totally different. But there's a number of different. It's interesting. I gave a show yesterday about how they were all Talmidim of Rabbi Ezra Atiyah. And one of the more impressive things when you contemplate the fact that they were all Talmidim of Rabbi Ezra Atiyah is that how different they are, even in style of Pesach and the way that they learn, totally different from each other. Rabbi Ezra Atiyah did not have one mold of Talmud, apparently. Basically, if you were Sfarad Gadol in the latter part of the 20th century, you were a Talmud of Rabbi Ezra Atiyah, right? Because he was the one producing Gadolim, apparently. I don't know, it doesn't seem that anyone else was. It seems like he was the one that was producing the Gadolim in Parat Yosef. In fact, one of the Talmidim in Yeshiva sent me a text this morning that he listened to the shir I gave about Rav Ezra Atiyah. It wasn't a shir, it was like a history lesson about Rav Ezra Atiyah. And he said, you missed one of the Gedolim. Rav Ben Chaim is a Talmud of Rav Ezra Atiyah. So, okay, I said that anyone who's a Gedol is probably a Talmud, a Sparta Gedol, is probably a Talmud of Rav Ezra Atiyah. So there you go. So, what was I saying? Yes, so Mordechai Eliyahu, Rav Avadya was known as Big Mekel. He was very into the Koch Teva, and he thought that there was incredible value in finding a Teva. Mordechai Eliyahu was not like that. The other big difference was how they treated Kabbalah. In fact, if you look at Rav Mordechai Eliyahu's tshuvas, he has a very beautiful essay in the, I think it's in the Hakdama to the second volume of his tshuvas, where he describes the role Kabbalah plays in Halacha. And you get the impression, even though he doesn't say it, is that that is his response to Rav Avadya. Because Rav Avadya, if you were to ask Rav Avadya, what role does Kabbalah play in Halacha, he would say zero, nothing. That there is that Halacha is Halacha, Kabbalah is Kabbalah, and when you engage in Halacha, Kabbalah has got nothing to do with it. However, Rav Mordechai Eliyahu disagrees, and he thinks that Kabbalah has a very critical role in Halacha. He thinks that very often when you have machlokas in Halacha, even though the accepted opinion may have been a certain way at a certain time, as you come closer to Yemos HaMashiach, where the Kabbalah is supposed to take on more significance, so then it may tilt in the other direction. Not, he says, to say that the Kabbalah would override the Halacha, but that the Kabbalah could tilt the Halacha. He gives us an example. The Halacha in Shulchan Aruch is that when you daven Shmon Esrei, you're supposed to mashmiel la'azna. You're supposed to say it loud enough that you can hear, but not loud enough to disturb those around you. That's alpi halacha, but it's a machlokas, and the Zohar says that you shouldn't say it loud at all, not even loud enough to hear it, that it should be totally silent. So Mordechai Eliyahu says, look at what Jewish practice is. What do most people do? He said, most people say silent Shmon Esrei totally silently. So are they all wrong? He says, no, that's an example of the Kabbalah taking an increased significance as time goes on. Which is a very non-cynical view as to why it is that people don't say Shmon Esrei more loud. Okay, so it seems to just say over here that we could be made because it's a din abundant and it's a suffix. It's not really a suffix. All the major Rishonim quoted the Shita, and they all rejected the Shita. So and the Shulchan Aruch rejects the Shita. So how do you say, oh, it's a suffix to Rabbanan, so we're going to be Mekel? Not every time you have a Machlokes Rishonim, is it a suffix to Rabbanan? So that's a little bit difficult. So it seems, basically, from the sources that we've seen, that all animals should be considered Moksa and should not be carried on Shabbos. And not only that, even part of the animal is Moksa and should not be moved on Shabbos unless it's a Tzar Bele Chaim situation. However, if there is Tzar Bele Chaim and a loss of money, so then you have the Chaznish that you're allowed to fully carry the animal based on that El Yeraba, obviously provided that you're in a place where there's an Eruv or that you're in a Rosh HaSayachid, you're not allowed to violate Hotza'a because of Tzar Bele Chaim, but you're allowed to violate Muktza of the animal because of Tzar Bele Chaim. The question needs to be asked is, okay, we granted the Rishonim already discussed an animal that can quiet a child, but the Rishonim probably could not conceive of the idea of an animal that is a plaything. Meaning, it could be that they would, if the kid was crying, they would take one of the goats from the farm that normally gives them goat milk or whatever. I don't know. Do goats have any other function? I guess we slaughter them? I don't know. So they may take a goat from the farm and say, oh, look, the goat, and the kid would stop crying. You know, but that wasn't the primary function of the goat, right? The primary function of the goat was to be a goat, right? But they never could have conceived that people would have dogs and cats, I guess, you know, if that's your thing. But that I don't know, I never chapped cat ownership. Dog ownership, I chapped a little bit, like, but whatever. But say, so, you know, or chilazons or whatever to entertain yourself. So, like the top three pets, dogs, cats, chilazons. So or other fish. So they never would have conceived that someone would keep such things in their house. So the question is, if its entire function is to entertain you, so does that take away the status of mukzah? It's possible. Shulchan Aruch was only talking about animals that were used when they had farms and they had no specific permitted use on Shabbos, but a pet that you set aside to entertain yourself, maybe that would not be mukzah. So the Rush, as we mentioned, quoted by the Or Zeruah, Asher's carrying a pet bird in a cage that sings because the animal is not considered a kli and it's still considered a mukzah. Now that's closer, right? Because that over there it's talking about a pet bird in a cage. What does it do? It doesn't do anything other than sings, or you know, maybe it talks or whatever, but it just entertains you. It doesn't do anything functional for you during the week. So the Rush is quoted by the Or Zeruah to answer that as well. So Rav Moshe in Or Chaim Chelek Dal Siman Tes Zayin, Rav Moshe writes, Ulataltal b'shabz yom tov hakli im dagim ketanim shenasu l'noi ulakashi nabayis. Let's say you have a little fish bowl, and there are these tiny little fish that are very beautiful. Near a sha'asur, the balichayim muktzimim. It's muktzah. Now, if you have a real fish tank, it's not a shayla, because no one's going to, you can't. Like, the thing is, when people come to my house, and like the kids, you know, like push the fish tank, parents always go, no, you're going to break it. I'm like, no, they won't. They can't budge it. It's very, very heavy. No one's going to. But if you have a little fish bowl, you know, from the carnival where you get the goldfish that's going to die tomorrow, so before it's dead, and you want to move it around, and you want to show it to people, so that's going to be muktzah, says Rav Moshe. So Moshe says that such a fish tank would be asr. Rav Moshe held that painting on a wall is not muktzah because it's decorative, but he held that you can't set aside an animal as house decor, and therefore it would still be muktzah even if it's really primarily there to be decorative. However, Shlomo Zalman in Shmir Shabbos, Shlomo Zalman writes otherwise. Shemati Megrashaz Zatzal, Dimistaber Dafsha Kliva Mayim Heim Basis Ludogim, Mikal Makom, Hol Vakum Yachad Miyuchadim Lunoy, Lutatum Makom Makom, Lugon Zelo, Yemachmir Rush, Mishum Lotlug, that the Rush wouldn't be Machmir if the whole thing was the whole purpose of it was to be a decoration in the house. There is another psak that Rav Moshe has that relates to animals, that is one of the more controversial psakim in Igros Moshe. And that is as follows. Here's why it's controversial. As you know, there are several English books on muktzah, right? There's Rabbi Simcha Ben Kohn's book on muktzah, but the original muktzah book was Rabbi Badner. What's his name? Rabbi Pinchas Badner, I think his name. So it's called Sefer Tiltul Shabbos, or the Hilchos Muktzah, and the Halachos of Muktzah. And at the end of the Sefer, he has a bunch of tshuvas that he printed from Rav Moshe. So at the end of the Sefer, in those tshuvas that he printed from Moshe, and he has tshuvas from Rav Shlomo Zalman as well, he has tshuvas in Hebrew from Rav Moshe. So, and many of those tshuvas were then printed in the 8th volume of Igros Moshe. The 8th volume of Igros Moshe, you guys are young, so by the time you were born, it was already out probably, but the 8th volume of the Igros, certainly by the time you were reading Igros Moshe's, the 8th volume was already out, but the 8th volume was published after Moshe had died, and it was very controversial at the time that came out, because Rav Moshe hadn't seen it. When the family put it out, they dafka changed some of the font in the tshuvas. So you have like the basic tshuva that he wrote with explanations or additional ma'ar makomos in a different font. And they write that because Rav Moshe was much older already, he wasn't writing as much. He wasn't being as expressive in his writing. So we had to fill things in sometimes, but we didn't want to be too presumptuous. So what we filled in, we let you know that we're filling in. So if you see that there's that there's something that we said that doesn't make sense, at least you know that it's something that we said. So that's how the family did it. That's how Rabbi Rappaport and Rabbi Tendler together. Two grandchildren did in the 8th volume of Igros Moshe. However, There is one situation, maybe more than one, but one that relates to Hilchos Mitzvah, where there seems to be a pretty clear break from what it, you know, from how it was originally published when Moshe responded to it versus how it's published in Hilchos Mitzvah, and that relates to pets. In the Sefer Tzeltzulis Shabbos, where Moshe was asked if the animals that children play with are muktzah, is your pet dog muktzah? And Rav Moshe said, all animals are muktzah, even the ones that kids play with. Then you open up the 8th volume of Igros Moshe, and the 8th volume of Igros Moshe reads as follows. She'ela, Tziporim ketanim shemet tzavtzafin uketanim sachkinimayim him dino kumuktzah. So Shabbos tafim heim vezi b'maskol hachi hiter of Rabbein Yosef Taltal for al-chai b'chazil sachim potinok tshuva kol balei chayim havelu muktzah. Afilu bosom shatinokos mesachkin behen. Ela imkein em yuchadim l'shashuim. Parentheses, pets. So that's a pretty big addition, right? Meaning they added an extra line. Ela imkein, and that was in the original font. Ela imkein oilim shashuim, pets. Meaning, yeah, all animals are muktzah if you own a farm. But pets are all not muktzah. Rav Badner wasn't asking about farm animals. He was asking about pets. And in the back of Rav Bodner's sefer, it said that pets are asa. Rav Moshe said pets are asa. That pets are muksa. So now in the 8th volume, so this became a big controversy. So they asked Rav Reuven, and Rav Reuven said Rav Moshe changed his mind. So we had to reflect that when we printed it, he changed his mind at some point that he thought that pets are not muksa. But that caused a lot of a big uproar. It could be that he changed his mind, but he didn't put that in writing. So you can't put that in writing after he didn't put that in writing. So it became a big to-do. So Rav Shachter is always a little bit suspicious of the tshuvas in the 8th volume. I don't know if it's because of that or because of other things, but he's often a little bit suspicious to make sure. He said he's seen other tshuvas where there was clear, where it didn't match, where he saw the original and he saw the what it says. So the joke in the old days was that there were 7 volumes of Igros Moshe and 1 volume of Igros Moshe David, because Rav Moshe David had that one. But that's really unfair. Yeah.
We kept going to degradation. So what about like a service animal? That's probably even more to a degree of being yuchad.
Yeah. So that l'chor would be much much better. Meaning that's really something that's for proper designation.
What about taxidermy? Those stuffed animals, like literally stuffed animals, is that?
I mean, it's dead.
Yeah. Does that change it?
Do people play with those things? They leave them on the walls, no?
Yeah, but they're dead. So is it because they're.
Yeah, then it's a decoration. It's like a painting. I think that would be the same as a painting. So I ain't shun our discussion about that painting.
People pet down each other.
They pet, the petting doesn't necessarily move it, though.
The hair.
Oh, we'll get to that in a second. Okay. So you have this this debate what Rav Moshe held as far as pets are concerned. Rav Shlomo Zalman is quoted in Shulchan Shlomo that pets are not muktzah, but in the footnote he writes that it's possible that even pets aren't muktzah because the animals are their own category of muktzah. Maybe there's no heter. In the Tshuvas Az Nidberu Chelechesim Lamed Vav, Rabbi Yamin Zilberu, the Talmud of the Chaznish, says that dogs which are pets are not muktzah because they were set aside dafka for that purpose, and that's enough to take away the status of muktzah. But many other achronim disagree and hold that pets are muktzah, and to pick up a pet just is asur to do on Shabbos. And included in that category are Rav Vadya and Yabi Omer and Chelek Heis and Chavav, the Sefer Tzar Bali Chaim in the name of many poskim. There's a Sefer called Tzar Bali Chaim, not surprisingly. On page 531 of the Sefer Tzar Bali Chaim, he quotes Rav Nevinsal. In Tshuvas Avigdor, Avigdor Alevi, page Resh Peches, Rav Shechter, also pets are muktzah. So it could very well be that pets are muktzah. Now, what's this issue talui on? Meaning, let's before we even get to what's this issue talui on? So it could be that it depends on the two reasons that we gave before for the Rishonim. Meaning the Rishonim discuss what happens if you have an animal that can quiet down a child. So the Rishonim quoted a shita that says that that's us, that's going to be fine, that's not muktzah, but then they all rejected and said it is muktzah. Why? So we quoted two reasons why they might reject such an opinion. Either because they think it's not enough of a utility, the fact that it could quiet down a child, or it's just a low plug. So l'chor, it's totally on those two deals. Because when you have a modern-day pet which has increased utility, meaning it's not just a farm animal that sometimes can keep your kid from crying, it is your family dog. It's, on the back of your minivan when it has, like, little, characters of your family. It's, you know, mommy and daddy and child and dog. I mean, it's part of the family. Taking it to the vet costs as much as another tuition. So it's mamish part of the family. So if that's the case, it has increased utility. So if you assume that all animals are mukzah lo plug, regardless of their utility, then household pets are also going to be mukzah. But if you assume that using an animal to amuse a child is not enough utility to remove it from being mukzah, then a cogent argument can be made that a pet is useful enough, that it's no longer going to be mukzah. Rav Shmuel David, I saw that Rabbi Jack there has an article on pets, on Shabbos in general, and he quotes the She'elos Uchuvos Merosh Tsurim, where he says that someone who's used to moving pets, it's like someone who designates a rock prior to Shabbos to use it for Shabbos, where the rock is not going to be mutzah because you've demonstrated that that rock has utility for you on Shabbos. And isn't that exact? Should a pet be, even though a pet is ke'etzim v'avanim, he shouldn't be garam e'etzim v'avanim. If you have actual e'etzim v'avanim, you could designate it for use before Shabbos. So why can't you do the same thing with your pet? In Shmir Shabbos, they quote Rosh Hashanah Zalman that seeing eye dogs are not muktzah, because the essential function is that they have to be moved, otherwise they don't work. Because if the seeing eye dog stays there and the blind man walks around, that's not going to be very helpful to the blind man. So its essential function is that it needs to work. So he points out in the Sefer that someone who holds that a seeing eye dog is not muktzah doesn't necessarily have to say the same thing about a pet. It could be a seeing eye dog, his function requires it being moved, whereas a pet doesn't, the function doesn't require it from being moved. But what about stam a stray? You have a stray animal. Someone, Rav Elia Dagold, told us that he was once walking in Yerushalayim and he saw a cat in a dumpster, not an unusual sight in Yerushalayim, and the cat had its head stuck in an Israeli pickle can. So the cat was like trying to look out the, and he was wearing the pickle can on his head. So they wanted to rescue the cat from the pickle can. So they wanted, can you pick up the cat to, get the pickle thing off of the cat's head? I don't know. That seems like a little risky to me, because you're going to have your friend pull in one direction, you pull in the other, the cat's head might come off of the cat instead of the pickle can coming off. But that was a shaila. Is that a violation of muktzah to pick up the cat? So even if you paskin that pets are muktzah, petting an animal may not be as big a deal. I mean, certainly to pick up the stray dog or stray cat, l'chora, we paskin, that's for sure muktzah. That's the very shulchan. If you don't have any of the terim that we said, what about you just start? Oh, so that's a tzar l'chaim. So then, can you pick it up to save it from itself? It's a pretty significant tzar l'chaim. So can you pick it up? So l'chora, according to the Elia Rabbi, yes. But according to the Chazon Ish, who's willing to be samech with the Elia Rabbi, no, because it also has to be b'makom hefsed. So you wouldn't be allowed to pick up the cat in that situation. What if you just stop and want to pet a stray dog? Not recommended. But what if you want to do that? You stop and want to pet a stray cat or a stray dog. So Shulchan Aruch in Shin Bei Sifir Aleph, Shin Bei Sifir Aleph, Shulchan Aruch writes, Mishen Shlach Lecha Yodo Batich, if a person's hands became dirty, Mekanch Biznav Hasus, U Biznav Hapara, you could find a horse and go to the horse's tail and use it as napkins. Like in Karen Biavna, we used to, they didn't have napkins in Yeshiva, so they used to use the curtains and the Chadar Ochel as a, I would go over and wipe the, it was no more disgusting than the towels they had in the bathroom, but just went around and around and around. So you go to so one of my Talmidim once told me the reason that they have these sinks right next to those bathroom towels so you can wash your hands after you accidentally touch the towels. So you go over to a horse's tail to dry your hands off from the moisture from the horses from the dirt that you have on your hand. Fine. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch says over there. So that you're allowed to wipe your dirty hands with the tail of a horse. So the Bir Halacha on the spot in Shin Beis Dibur Maschel Mekancha Kosev B'Sefer Tosef Shabbos Tahainu she'ina mechubarim bebehema. That's only if it's a horse's tail. But if the horse's tail is attached to a horse, then you're not allowed to do that. So if you happen to stand have horse's tails hanging around detached from a horse, that's a wonderful napkin. You can use that to clean your hands. But if it's mechubar lebehema dimloke, no kaimel and dosu taltabal chayav yumutsaso. Ad kan dvarim says it's the seventh Shabbos. You're not allowed to be taltabal chay. You can't play with a horse's tail. You can't move around a horse's tail. Lanias Daiti says a Beralachi Yeshla Ayin Bazesh. Lo Wuskar Ze Bishum Posek. It never says in any of the Achronim on the Shulchan Aruch that we're talking about a detached horse's tail. Shulchan Aruch says you're allowed to dry your hands on a horse's tail. You're allowed to clean your hands on a horse's tail. We're supposed to Beruach HaKodesh figure out that that means a detached horse's tail? Who has detached horse's tails? Obviously, he's talking about a horse's tail that's attached. V'gam lo shor tosefta mishum kol kach. The shom nisker gam kein b'znav shuel or b'seir shuel. V'yam t'gam zonim mayri betolah shem kein hakol chodim milsi. So what? The fox's tail and the fox's hair all over. He's talking about detached stuff. The tosefta quotes all of this together. Umar shehikshim shemisr tiltul. Aye, but what about mukta? How can you wipe your hands on the horse's tail? Isn't it mukta? Whoa, says Be'alacha Chidush. That it could be that although there's Nisr of Tiltul Mukta and Bali Chaim, that's only the actual body of the Bal Chai, but the Seyar of the Bal Chai, which is growing out of the Bal Chai, that's going to be Mutzah Dlo Chashuv Kikuf from Bezeb Tzorchim. But he leaves it as a tzarech iyun. So that is a fascinating bir alacha, which would be the heter to pet an animal, to pet a friend's dog. You know, l'chora, you can certainly if it's a stray. So the bir alacha is the bir alacha is mesupik about it leaves it as a tzarech iyun. But let's say it's your friend's dog, so it's an actual pet. So one could argue that first of all, many posts hold that pets are not muksa anyway. And second of all, even if pets are muksa, but if I'm just petting it, I'm just messing around with the hair of the dog, so then you have the bir alacha. So maybe you have enough to have a tziruf of the svek sveka to allow you to pet your friend's dog if you are interested in doing so. But for a stray dog or a stray cat, that would not be enough. Rav Nevinsal, in the Tshuvas Avigdor HaLevi, paskins that you're allowed to pet an animal even though you can't carry a pet on Shabbos, because he just passes straight like the Bir Alacha. He passes directly like the Bir Alacha. Yeah.
What about a chashash of
Tlisha? A chashash of Tlisha. Does that happen a lot? Yeah.
For dogs that shed.
So probably if you just touch it softly, it's probably the same as your hair. If you touch it softly, it's okay. But if you really like get into it, sometimes people like to really, vigorously pet. So then if it's a chashash of Tlisha, it's a problem. Should I comb your hair?
I recorded a star before of my pets, and it's like not any worse than AIDS and blah blah. What room is there to disagree? Like, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Unless there's a low plug. That they made a meaning that's how half the Rishonim say is that one of the titles of Rishonim say is that stop, there's a low plug on animals. Because all animals are,
in the low plug, that's a mux at the beginning, you could still be.
Yachid for what? But the whole point is that that's not a mutter. By a brick, let's say, the mutter uses using it as a doorstop. But isn't the whole question here about whether that's...
Well, those are two possibilities. Either that it's not enough of a utility.
Right.
So you're saying the two in combination with each other. Maybe that's smart, that you need the combination of both. Yeah. In Rabbi Jachter's article, he quotes from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein that Rav Aaron said that it's. I'll read you the quote that it is proper to conduct himself in accordance with the stringent opinion in this matter, since this appears to be the opinion of Tosfos, Mordechai, Gosa, Shri, and Rosh. Yet one need not admonish those who practice in accordance with the lenient opinion in this matter. Since this issue is embroiled in the dispute amongst the Rishonim, and the logic of those who rule leniently is compelling. Okay, so it's a machlokes, so better to be machmir, but if you go home and your little sister is playing with the dog or picking up the dog, you don't have to make a big deal about it, because there are poskim, there are serious poskim that are makel. Obviously, the makom tzar be lechayim, it's a totally different story.
Just to qualify on the Moshe that it's not muksa. Did Rav Reuven himself also hold that it would be not muksa? Like, even if we don't have the Moshe himself, do we have Rav Reuven?
Rav Reuven would only say what Rav Moshe holds. I don't think Rav Reuven argues very well. Guys asked him that when I brought guys to Rav Reuven. They said, "When do you ever disagree? Do you remember what he said?"
Smoking.
He said that smoking he disagrees with his father. That was that's ringing a bell. Yeah, Mayor and I brought a bunch of guys to Rav Reuven one summer, and the guys asked him like, "Do you ever disagree?" Did you ask him that question?
No.
Do you remember who?
No.
Someone asked him, "Do you ever disagree with your father?"
Great question.
Yeah. So yeah, I think Mayor's right. I think he said smoking, that Rav Moshe held smoking is mutter, and he thinks smoking is
mutter. Was he saying that Rav Moshe would agree with our nowadays?
So, which is it's interesting because he didn't say that.
Right.
Whereas Rav David said he had no doubt that Rav Moshe would say nowadays that smoking is asi. Again, as far as an authority on what Rav Moshe held or would hold, Rav Shechter holds, Rav David is the only authority. Meaning he said, Reuven went to learn in other yeshivas. He learned in Tells, and he was in other places. He was in Staten Island. Rav David was with Rav Moshe always. He was there for all of it. So he never left. He never left his side. So Rav Shechter always holds that Rav David was the address to go to for to figure out where Rav Moshe held or would hold.
What if you're at my friend's house who has a dog, and the dog sits on your lap on Shabbos? You say that there's no tzorah right?
I would turn to the friend and say, "Can you get this animal off of my lap?" Yes.
What if you're at someone's house and they get hana'am from you petting the dog? And you normally hold you shouldn't pet a dog in Shabbos. So should you now make the person happy by petting the dog? Or?
Well, it tells you that there's an Indian to it. Why would you make them happy?
People are crazy, I don't know.
No, I'm saying why would that be a cheshbon though? Okay, make them happy in other ways. Juggle. you can think of other ways to make people happy. No?
I'm sorry, what Rav Jaffer's had in the name of listening to that.
He says, "Ein mochem biyadam." You know, you're not going to object if they do it, but it doesn't mean that you're going to do it. So I think Rav Shechter, I think, is machmir also that on this issue that dogs are in fact muktzeh.
So, kind of on that note, let's say around people that hold, pets or mother or whatever, let's say your family or whatever, that you have a dog. Your mother in this situation has to take the dog for a walk. Is there any issues there? Leashing the dog, walking.
Oh, okay,
the
dog? So there are a whole bunch of other issues relating to pets. On Shabbos, maybe we'll get into certain.
Shechter machmir even on the petting issue, or just on the lifting?
I didn't ask him. Anyone know? Anyone ask Shechter about petting a dog?
Like, I've never seen anyone be machmir about dogs. Like, dog owners. Does
right.
Anyone know anyone who machmir a dog for all of Shabbos?
But all the non-dog owners are machmir.
I've never heard of a family like machmir.
So how do you not let it go to the bathroom the whole Shabbos? You bring it out. Yeah, but it could be that you could bring it out by letting it walk you, or letting it out into the yard.
If it has to go, and you open the door.
Yeah, let it out into the backyard. Let it do its thing.
I hope it comes back.
No, the backyard is fenced in, whatever. Right, and after Shabbos, you'll go clean up your backyard. I guess. Yeah, that's inconvenient for the person, but you know. Rabbi Jachter highlights a couple of other issues that are nogeya to pets on Shabbos. So the use of a leash, let's take that one. When you walk an animal on Shabbos, if there's no eruv, so you have a problem. Shulchan Aruch in Shin Hei, Siftei Zayin, Paskins that the handle of the leash shouldn't go more than a tefach outside of your grasp. Because even though the leash is tuffle to the animal, so it's not considered that you're holding the leash, but there's no function to the whatever's sticking out. If this side of the leash is connected to the animal and that side of the leash is not, so whatever, meaning that side of my hand is not, so whatever leash comes out from the back part of my hand is going to be a violation of carrying, so it's a tefach. Because then it looks like you're walking the animal, but you're carrying the leash and you're not just holding onto the leash. So I think the poskim are machmir to use a grachna tefach for that kind of situation, meaning not to use a chazinish tefach, to use a more what we normally think the more makil version of a tefach, but over here to be more machmir. Shulchan Aruch paskins that you have to be sure to keep the leash pretty taut so that the leash doesn't hang within 3 inches of the ground. Because if the leash hangs very close to the ground, then it will look like something that the animal wears unnecessarily, and then that would be a problem. So that's if there's no eruv. But the more pressing issue is tzeda, right? That's the real issue when you have animals. So did we do tzeda? We didn't do tzeda this year. Oh man, we missed a lot of good ones. Next time I do Shabbos, I'm gonna get the rest. You guys are stuck. I mean, you also have the rest of your lives. So in Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, he says that tzeda, he defines tzeda as anything that a person does to take away some of the animal's freedom, right? That the animal is free to do, it's free to roam, and you now blocked it into a certain situation. So the sugi is a mission in Shabbos and Daf Kufav, that the iser would include closing the door of your house if you're trapping the animal inside your house. So the question is, what about a household pet? The animal lives in the house, so you close the door, now the animal's not going to be able to get out. So the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch distinguish between three types of animals. One category of animals are animals that the Gemara in Beitza Chavtal says that you would say, that you need to bring a trap in order to be able to catch it. The Rashi explains that it takes a lot of effort to catch such an animal. And that's asumita raisa, to catch such an animal. That if you know in order to get the animal, I need to go get a trap, otherwise there's no getting this animal, there's no securing the animal without a trap. A mouse, right? There's no way of getting it. Let's say, it would only be seidimita raisa if you want the mouse, right? Because the seidah of animals is when you... So let's say you want a pet mouse, right? Or a hamster, let's say. So it's running all over the place. So you get a trap in order to catch it. The other extreme are those animals that have no resistance whatsoever. You say, come here, and it comes right there. So it's just an obedient animal that goes wherever you want it to go. So the Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Chav Ches says that you're not allowed to lift it because it's muktzah, but you could push it so that it could go to where it needs to go, because such an animal is an obedient animal anyway, and there's no isra of tzeda on such animals, because you can't talk about capturing or hunting something that's a completely obedient animal that goes wherever you want it anyway, because you're not really eliminating its freedom. It doesn't have any freedom, it just does whatever you say. Then you have a middle category of animals, and that's where the machlokas is, and that refers to that category of animals is those animals that will come back at night, but do give some amount of resistance when the master tries to bring them home, when the owner tries to bring them home. So when it comes to such animals, the Mishnah in Shabbos Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph says that if you're hunting a wild animal or a bird that that you own, it's you're pater from any onesh, meaning it's pater avalasu. So because they've already been tamed somewhat, so the Rishonim, the Rashba, the Balait, or others say that when it says that you're pater, it should be understood as pater umutir. That whereas other Rishonim, the Rambam, Tosos, and others say no, pater always means in Hilchos Shabbos, it always means pater of a lesser. So it's still asumita rabbanan. That's always what it means in Hilchos Shabbos. Why should this be any different? So in Bir Halacha, he suggests we should in Bir Halacha and Simshin Tazayin. In Dibra Maskel the Yesh Omrim, he says we should try to follow the more machmir of the two opinions, the suggestion they should try to follow the more machmir opinion suggests that if it's b'makom hatzorech, you can follow the more makel opinion. So again, an animal that's totally obedient, no problem at all. An animal that's mamish, you need to get a trap every time you want to catch it. So that's an issur d'oraisa. The animal that comes back at night, but gives you a hard time a little bit, so that's a machlokas. And we try to be machmir. So therefore, halachas of tzeda depend on how well behaved your pet is. These are one of the rayas that they bring against the murex being the chilazim, which by the way, we're not going to end up having a chilazim presentation. The guy reached out to me today. He said it was just too hard to arrange all the stuff in YU. So maybe next year. But one of the rayas, Atakov, we should have it is no get til chashavas. One of the rayas that they bring is that the murex is not a chilazon, is because hatsad chilazon, right? The Mishnah says you trap a chilazon is not very hard to catch. The Gemara says that the definition of tzeda is if you can't get it in one lunge. But if you just go grab it in one lunge, then it's not tzeda. It's meaning something that's mechusar tzeda is subject to tzeda, but if it's not mechusar tzeda, so it's not subject to tzeda. So the raya they bring is a chilazon is a snail. It's extremely slow. You know how I used to have four chilazons, and there was a guy from Cleveland asked me if he could have one. I said, sure, I'm not home, you can just go into my house and take one. And how did he take one? He opened up the fish tank, stuck his hand in, took a chilazon and took it. That's all it takes to grab a chilazon. So that's one of the rayas. So the answer to that raya is, yeah, but chilazons aren't indigenous to fish tanks in North Woodmere. They're indigenous to the bottom of the ocean. And that takes some effort, meaning that takes some active tzeda in order to get chilazons from there. But anyway, so based on this, it will all depend how resistant your animal is. If your animal is resistant, if it's not resistant at all, it's totally obedient, and there's no issue whatsoever. If it comes every night, it comes back without your intervention, but when you try to grab a hold of it, it gives you a little bit of resistance. So then you have this machlokes rishonim, and the Bir Halacha says we should try to be machmir. But if it's rebelled and doesn't want to bishum panim vof and doesn't want to come back, then it's nisa daraisa. So when you take the leash of a pet to allow the animal to run in an open area, right, and then you want to reattach the leash on Shabbos Yom Tov, if the animal is obedient, so then it's fine. But if the animal is disobedient to its owner when you want to put the leash back on, and he's not so interested in getting his leash back on, so then it's probably best not to put the leash back on. Probably better, even better not to take it off in the first place, right? Meaning, because it's not so nice to other people when you're walking your dog and the dog is not on a leash. Believe it or not, there are people that are afraid of dogs, and that's not a nice thing to do. So probably better not to take the leash off in the first place. You also have to avoid trapping any animal that's not, in the first place. Meaning, if the door to your house is closed, if the door to your house isn't closed and there's an animal that's not so obedient, you probably shouldn't close the door to your house unless it's closed off in a different room. But you could avoid the issue of trapping when opening the door by immediately filling the gap that the door, by blocking it with your body and then closing the door as you come into the house. So it's not called a violation of tzeda if you walk into your house. If you walk into your house and your body is blocking the door and then you close the door behind you, even though you may have a crazy animal that's looking to get away. So that's how you would avoid tzeda. Birds are complicated. Birds are not considered trapped even if they're in your house, because even in your house it's hard to catch them. Meaning, if your dog is in your house, it's easy to find him, it's easy to get him. You get him in one lunge, it's not mechusar tzeda. But if a bird is out of its cage and is flying around your house, so that's very hard. So if it goes back to its cage by itself, but it gives you a little bit of resistance, and you want to put it back in its cage, so b'tzarach gadol, b'makom tzarach gadol, you're allowed to do that because you can rely on the other shita in Rishonim, like the Bir Halacha said. But if it doesn't come back to its cage by itself, and it's a disobedient bird, so then you have a problem. So, end of the day, as far as dealing with pets on Shabbos, pets are mukta, pashtos. There are poskim that hold, though, that nowadays, because they are entirely a plaything, they are no longer mukta. Shlomo Zalman entertained that possibility, certainly. So certainly, it does not seem like the kind of thing you want to give a big macha about, that if someone handles their pets, that they're in violation of an issue. I mean, Rav Lichtenstein's approach seems very reasonable, but we should follow the psak of our Rosh Yeshiva, the majority of Gedolei HaPoskim, and of what Rav Moshe wrote in the original tshuva, and ideally we should be machmir for the mukta status of pets. Obviously, b'makom tzar b'alei chayim, if it's a hefsek meruba, you could lift it, and if it's not a hefsek meruba, you can b'makom tzar b'alei chayim, you can move it a little bit. And as far as tzeda is concerned, so you need to be a little bit careful when it comes to tzeda, and you should try to live in a community that has an eruv if you want to walk your animal, because then it gets too complicated otherwise. So Be'ezras Hashem tomorrow is Tuesday, Be'ezras Hashem on Wednesday we'll get into Paul's bicycles, things like that, you know, and their mitzvah status, all these other varying of the other mitzvah traditions. Okay.